This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline is Mark Packer, the host of Off Campus on ESPNU Radio on Sirius XM 84. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, boys. How are you?
We're doing all right. A couple of us are Terp alums and... not a great time for the University of Maryland. How do you read this thing? And we kind of think it's unrecoverable for DJ Durkin in the program.
Well, I will say this. I'm sure we'll touch base with Urban Meyer, too, and everybody's been trying to connect dots, which I don't think is necessarily fair. But I do think there is a common thread here for all of us as fans, and that is you got to let the process go out. I mean, when 2 weeks ago I saw too many media people scream into the high heavens, man, this guy, Urban Meyer, needs to fire him, all the garbage from Florida. Hey, you got to let the process go through. And the same thing holds true here at Maryland. And I know that's hard to do in this day and age, whether you're a fan or just a bystander, because you're sitting there talking about, hey, wait a minute, a 19-year-old kid, Jordan McNair, passed away. So obviously it's going to lend itself to some emotion that, hey, that can't be right. And you know what? That can't happen in today's society. When you start talking about big-time college football, in this day and age, with the resources, the medical attention, nutritionists, on-call staff members, something like that should never, and I mean never, happen in big-time college football. But you've got to let this process go through, from the investigations to not only what happened with Jordan McNair, but also what is the situation with DJ Durkin? You know, is it a toxic environment like ESPN reported? I've never been to one of their practices, ever. I've never met DJ Durkin, so how in the world am I supposed to tell you, hey, fire this guy, or listen, this guy needs to be the man? You know, guys like Will Muschamp have come to his defense, talking about what a quality guy is. I've also heard the flip side. Former players and others that go, hey, you know what, this guy runs a really tough camp. Regardless of what that is, the process has to go through. And what ends up happening at Maryland, I don't know. You know, it kind of reminds me of back in the late 80s when I used to work at the University of Maryland, and I still remember the Len Bias death and the investigation and the trickle-down effect and how many people were affected. You know, if any school in America should kind of understand this in some respect, it is the University of Maryland. We've kind of been through this before in some respect. So, again, I think everybody needs to take a step back, let the process go through. And at that point in time, hopefully, much like the Ohio State case, you get to the facts and then you can kind of make some kind of judgment.
Yeah, I'm wondering if, and you're 100% correct, that should never happen, especially never at a Big Ten school, right? I mean, it's not like he had a heart attack. I mean, heat stroke is 100% curable. Preventable if you just kind of use your head, you know, you're confident.
Well, it's real simple. There's so much money. I mean, so much money now poured into Power 5 schools. And right. The Big Ten's printing money like nobody's business. The SEC, nobody's going broke. Nobody's going broke in any Power 5 school. And given the fact that, hey, when you have a football team, you got 120-some guys running around, you know it's going to be 100 degrees outside, whether it's a workout, a practice, whatever the case may be. A conditioning is a 365, 24/7 deal now. It is inexcusable. For any kid to be in a position where he is pushed to the limit, where you go, hey, I'm not sure he's doing well. And, you know, it breaks your heart when you sit there and you think about Jordan McNair and what, you know, now he's going. Can you imagine being his family?
Yeah,
and you're sitting here waiting for some kind of review that's going to be done by September 15th. I mean, I can't even put myself into that position to see how would you react. You'd go crazy. But it should never happen at Maryland or anywhere else. Or the money is so big and so strong in terms of resources and, again, the medical staff and technicians and everything else. It's really hard to fathom something like this could happen.
Mark, let me ask you this. And I believe I had heard maybe on your show when you were interviewing someone that the media has requested the video of that particular practice and Maryland will not release it. Has Maryland said whether or not DJ Durkin was actually at that practice or not? Was he on the field?
I've not heard any confirmation that he was there, but I just know that in this day and age, almost everything that these student athletes do now when it comes to some kind of workout or practice is on tape. And, we had conversations about this yesterday, obviously, since it was such a huge story over the weekend and still is and will be. I'm hard-pressed to believe there isn't some type of video evidence that can at least say, hey, here's what happened in the 40 minutes prior to where we think the medical examiners say that the stroke took place at 5 p.m. and the paramedics were called apparently at 5:57. I know the school has refuted those reports, but, you know, that's why you do an investigation. I think that's why all of us really, and quite frankly, even in the media, really need to be careful in terms of saying, hey, thumbs up, thumbs down, get rid of this guy. Hey, let's see what we know to be true. And right now, it's still so early in the process. The only thing we definitely know is that Jordan McNair passed away, and that should never have happened.
Here's the thing. I guess I can understand some coaches being a little bit clueless about heat exhaustion or whatever, heat stroke. I mean, it's 2018. I think most Division I, certainly the head coaches and, you know, top coaches should understand these things. But it's just unfathomable to me that the trainers couldn't be more aware of what potentially was going on. And I don't know what they did, but the fact that he went to the hospital with a temperature of 106 and didn't appear to be given that ice bath yet, that's just – can you speak to that at all? Because I almost blame the trainers more than I do the coaches.
Well, I mean, I think it's going to fall under the premise that, hey, as the head football coach
Absolutely.
Of school X, you're responsible
no doubt.
For the following, which
no
would
doubt.
Be all the above.
No doubt.
But you're right. I mean, you know, like I said, with all the resources now and – Now, let's be honest, these kids, you know, we had Gene Chizik on the show yesterday, and we were talking about this as a head coach, and he said, hey, listen, you know, you push the limits. These kids want to be caught and want to be taught, you know, and want to be pushed because you also got to love them. You know, when things are not going right, whether it be a physical thing, a mental thing, you hug them, you love them, and it's tough love. He said most of these kids, in his opinion, want to be coached, want to be pushed, and they're all normally in such great physical shape because it's so competitive in this day and age. And like I said, when you're a member of a Big Ten school or any Power Five school, this can't happen. I mean, it just simply cannot happen. So, you know, if this is a deal that, hey, where do you point the finger? You point the finger at the entire staff.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because this is, you know, this all falls under the premise of, hey, at the University of Maryland and for future recruits, we're going to take care of your kid, whether we're talking about women's lacrosse, we're talking about college football. That is part of the deal, that when a family says, hey, listen, not only are we going to get a great quality education, but if we're going to play sports, I want to feel 100% confident that my kid, regardless of the sport, is going to be taken care of, not only in the classroom, on the field, coaching, the whole deal. It's part of the deal. So, you know, this is a DGA Durkin issue, but it may be even more specific, as you pointed out, regarding the trainers.
Well, I mean, of course. I mean, you know, the head guy and your staff, you're going to take the fall for it. But
right,
the trainers are
right.
the one that are trained specifically to deal with this. That's what's so maddening about it. I don't know.
Yeah,
the other thing that points to, Mark, there is an inherent conflict between trainers and coaches. Because coaches want their guys available. And trainers feel that pressure to make them available. You know, and if a trainer's not giving them the go, the green light, the green light, the green light, the go, they're going to get rid of you and bring in another guy who's going to be more, you know what I mean? There's kind of a yes-man mentality of that job, almost.
Well, it's reached the point now, listen, we're talking about strength and conditioning coaches are now making upwards of $600,000 a year. When you start asking college football coaches who are making a ton, too, and I'm not belittling anybody for what they can make. Hey, if somebody's willing to write you that kind of check, that's what you're worth.
Right.
But it's amazing, though, when you talk to other coaches around the country, which we do on our show, that when they start putting together a staff, yeah, you want to have a great offensive and defensive coordinator, but that strength and conditioning coach is really a critical piece to the success of any big-time college football program because they understand that when you're talking about that many guys, hey, you want to push the limit in terms of, you know, what are they going to do from a physicality standpoint? It's a tough game, let's be honest. I mean, you know, I know you guys up in D.C. talk about the rules of the NFL and have we made the game softer. And college football is looking to be safe, too. But it is a tough, physical, violent game. And it's played by guys that better be tough and physical. So that strength and conditioning coach is a critical hire to any college football program around the country, and that includes University of Maryland.
You know, the other thing that speaks to me when I was reading the details of this and, you know, pushing a kid and, you know, reading the stories about vomiting and that sort of thing is that it must just be so sort of routine where, and we know this just from afar, watching from afar, that, you know, these guys are pushed, as you say. It must just be so routine that kids struggle in some of these workouts and think that it didn't really raise a red flag. You know, they've probably dodged this bullet so many times.
It's hard.
Before.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like I said, I go back to the interview we had with Gene Chizik yesterday, and he said, hey, it is a really thin line. You got to understand, you got to have trust in your coaches and your medical staff that, hey, you know, Bobby Joe over here, he's not doing so hot. Hey, you take him, you put him down. But you got to hug him, you got to love him, and you got to push him. So, again, that is a delicate balance that I think every single coach in America, every single day, every single minute has to play with. And but again, and, you know, when you start talking about what apparently happened to Jordan McNair, that cannot happen. I mean, again, it's easy to say that 3 months after the fact. I could say that today at any practice that we're going to have in college football. Can't happen.
We are talking to Mark Packer, hosts Off Campus on ESPNU Radio, Channel 84 on SiriusXM. Now we fast forward to week one, you know, Labor Day weekend with Maryland playing Texas, hosting Texas. And, you know, Matt Canada comes in from LSU in the offseason, didn't work out down there. Some people said he's hard to get along with. Who knows? We've never talked to him. But now, and he's been a coach for 25 years, but he's never been a head coach, I don't believe. So now he's kind of thrust into this, you know, this new role in a power conference opened up against Texas. I mean, and Texas is going to have revenge on their mind after what happened last year. How does that whole thing translate? And I agree with you. I don't think DJ can survive this. I can't imagine they're going to bring him back in week two or week three and say, all right, everything's good. I think Matt Canada is going to be the guy the rest of the year. So, you know, how can he handle this? Do you think he'll handle it well?
Well, it's, you know, it's a great question. And there's only one way to find out, and that's to watch it. I don't suspect that DJ Durkin can get back as the head coach until Maryland finishes all their external investigations. And now they have two of them going on. As I mentioned, the one with Jordan McNair, which they hope is going to be done by September 15th. And now they just unveiled this one, the next one, given the ESPN toxic culture story. So, I mean, I can't imagine that Maryland puts DJ Durkin back as the head coach, best case scenario, until those investigations are complete. So with that said, you got to assume that Matt Canada, hey, tag, you're it in the short term, maybe long term too. We'll see how this plays out. And Canada is a fascinating story. I mean, he was at NC State. He went to Pitt. Now, next thing you know, he's getting paid a ton to be LSU's savior. I don't know what happens to quarterbacks at LSU or what happens down there, but they can't figure that thing out. The forward pass apparently is unique. So Matt Canada is a terrific offensive mind. And now, given what he's been, can you imagine the whirlwind he's been through in the last 24 months, really, give or take, given all the places he's been. So, hey, guess what? You get to play Texas. You know Texas is going to have a chip on the shoulder after what happened last year in Austin. You had all the crazy stuff swirling over the weekend with Tom Herman denying all these reports being tied in the Urban Meyer revenge thing. I mean, it's really kind of as the world turns kind of game, right, with Maryland and Texas. So I think for the Terps, you know, when you take a snapshot of their season coming up, I think they play in the toughest division in college football. I know we've not seen a game yet. I know ESPN thinks the SEC West is the greatest. I think it's going to be the Big Ten East. I think from a Maryland's perspective, you got to figure, hey, there's no way in the world, no way Maryland can have the same kind of quarterback issues with injuries as they did a year ago. Hill coming back certainly helps. Canada is a terrific offensive mind. I think Maryland's going to be the kind of team this year that will stick their nose in somebody's business and cause trouble. However, I just think because of Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan, and Michigan State, I just can't foresee them being better than any of those four. However, I do think Maryland at some point in time this season is going to stick their nose in somebody's business of note and cause a real problem. I think that he's got that kind of talent.
Real quick, you had mentioned Urban Meyer out of the gate there. Any thought, any feeling on what's going to happen there? I believe he'll probably save his job. I'm not sure if he'll get a suspension or not, but I just think if they were going to fire him, they would have already done it. What do you think?
Well, I think much like I mentioned with Maryland, and I saw too many people who I respect in our business just running off at the mouth 2 weeks ago. He's fired. This is ridiculous. I'm like, hey, how can you make that statement? We don't even have the facts. There are so many areas to go with Ohio State that's bizarre. All this he said, she said stuff that's been going on for the last, you know, 6-7 days has been kind of crazy. But I thought when Urban came out, obviously he screwed up Big Ten Media Days. That's a given. I thought when he put out that statement where he said he just wasn't in a position to really conduct the interview, whatever it was just ridiculous. I thought that was written by an attorney. I thought he was kind of laying down the foundation that if in case this seems to go sideways, you're going to write me a check. You know, I don't know what happened there. And I can't answer why in the world a guy like Zach Smith could still be on your staff after everything you went through with him at the University of Florida. He is the only guy on the planet that can answer that question. I just hope, much like the Maryland case, that when they do these internal investigations, that you get to the truth. And whatever they decide, hey, that's your moral compass. You got to make the best decision with what's going to happen. You know, Ohio State fired Woody Hayes. They fired Jim Tressel. They still had great football teams and all that stuff afterwards. I suspect whether Urban is back or not, Ohio State 25 years from now, still going to have great football. 100 years from now, when we're long gone, they're still going to have a great football program. It's just the way it is. So I don't know what happens with Urban Meyer, but obviously it's kind of bizarre. You know, we go through kind of June and July, kind of quiet on the college scene. The month of August has been wacko between those two stories with Maryland, Ohio State. Headlines like the kid at LSU who apparently stole a getaway car, did a robbery of a pawn shop. The kids at Florida bringing frying pans to a fight with a former gambler. The Wake Forest men's basketball coach with a fight up in New York City. The guy's now dead. It has been about as bizarre a 2 weeks as we've seen in college in a long, long time. And I think I speak for everybody who's a college sports fan. We can't fast forward enough to get to September 1st. In the first week of college football. I mean, it's just been crazy.
I agree. Hey, Mark, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for making some time for us this morning. We'll talk to you in a couple
of weeks.
Yes, sir. I can promise you in a couple of weeks when we have you on again, we're going to be talking about games and hopefully not talking about Maryland and Ohio State. All right?
Well, amen to that. I think we're all ready for a great first week of games, and it's always great being on with you guys. You guys are doing an awesome job.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it, buddy.
See you, bud.
You got it, guys.
Mark Packer, off-campus ESPNU Radio, SiriusXM 84.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Four. And joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline is our pal Chris Nocke, Terps Radio color commentator. What's going on, C-Nock?
Chris, what's up, buddy?
How you guys doing?
Well, great,
unfortunately,
man.
We got to talk to you about Jordan McNair and you know DJ Durkin. It's not something we really want.
Wait
to
a sec, Jason. You told me we were going to talk about the men's basketball trip to Italy the past 10 days.
How are they still there? Are they back?
They got back last night.
How'd it go?
Apparently it was a great trip by all. By everybody's. Posts and
right.
Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. They went 3-0, and I think they had a hell of a time over there. So,
you know what? It's perfect timing for Turds to get out of town. He didn't have to get asked about all this stuff for the last 10 days.
Yeah, right? Wear beige and keep your mouth shut, fly under the radar.
Why does it seem like we just can't get out of our own way at Maryland? There's just always something.
It's always something, and it's really, and this is beyond just the occasional pratfall that you see, EB. This is really horrific, and it's by all reports, a very preventable death that occurred, and that's sort of the story at its core. And then you get sort of the onion unraveling here a little bit. So the layers of the onion being peeled back. So yes, very disappointing, and I have no idea why that is.
Can you speak to this because you're a former coach, right? Division I head coach. You understand the dynamics here. You push guys, you know what it's like, and you also work with trainers. And I'm kind of zeroing in on that relationship because I know that inherent conflict that exists between coaches and trainers, right? Because coaches want these guys available, and trainers want to protect their guys, but they also want to keep their jobs, so they want to keep their guys available. And listen, everyone's going to take the fall for this, But I'm really zeroing in on the trainers because they know better than any coach out there the signs of what's going on in these kinds of instances. And there needs to be a level of independence, I think, Chris, that isn't there. You know what
I
mean?
I definitely agree with that. And and the science and technology is such in this day and age that it provides trainers and strength and conditioning guys with more and more information than they ever had available to them. So the decisions ought to be a little bit more cut and dried. Now that said, yeah, there is that emotional sort of push and pull between coach and trainer. And you know, it's funny, I don't even really remember all of that so much. It's funny. I had a conversation with a guy who used to play Division I basketball this weekend, a guy who actually is sitting in that studio. And one of the things that I remember about being a player was coming home, particularly when I was young, you know, as a freshman in college, coming home from workouts and basically just falling on the bed and thinking to myself, I can't do that again tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then you know what happens? You wake up in the morning, you have some breakfast, and you do it again tomorrow. And so the job of the coach, and with the trainer obviously watching alongside, is to push you as much as he can possibly push you. And now that doesn't mean he has to harangue you or berate you or humiliate you or anything like that. But ultimately, the job is to ask for more than you think you can give. And it's a kind of a weird dynamic, but it's obviously a critical dynamic in sports.
Yeah.
Had you heard whispers about Durkin and the program, kind of all that other stuff, the bullying and, you know, the toxic culture that was reported by ESPN?
Yeah, well, JP, I mean, I didn't hear anything like that, but none of that. I mean, I read that, and I read the article, which, by the way, was obviously very, very one-sided, and it appeared to be straight from the attorney's mouth, which is, I mean, Maryland's not going to comment on it anyway, so I guess it's going to be one-sided. But I didn't think I think that's probably business as usual in a Power 5 football program where you've got all these elite athletes. What separates one team from another? I mean, Ohio State might have 85-star kids, and that's what separates them from everybody else, but you know, from the rank and file of, the other 80, 90, 100 Division I, Power 5 football programs, what separates them? And, coaches always think they're miracle workers. They they think they can be the difference in getting kids to kind of go further than they ever thought they could go. So, I never really heard that. But a lot of the stuff that the rhetoric and stuff that just didn't surprise me at all. I maybe I'm blind to all that, but I just sort of thought that was SOP, in Power 5 football.
Now, I don't think the DJ can survive it. I don't. If I had to put money on it, I think they'll let him go. But can he survive it if we find out that he wasn't, and maybe you know if he was or wasn't on the field, but if he was not on the field that day.
It shouldn't matter, though.
It shouldn't, but is there a way he can survive it if he wasn't a part of that particular scenario when Jordan passed out?
I don't know. The thing is that even if he was, and again, if you believe everything in the article, and there's no reason not to, and you wait for Maryland's report to come out. If DJ's on the field, obviously there's everybody's got some culpability here, the thing is that I think you can make the argument that once McNair struggles and he's taken off the field and put in the hands of the trainers, then that's where DJ and his staff sort of cede responsibility. But the fact of the matter is, it's your program.
Mm-hmm.
You're the guy who goes and sits in a recruit's living room and looks the mom in the eye and bats your baby brown eyes and says, I'm going to take care of your son, And so ultimately it falls on you, whether you think it's fair or not. It's just the way it goes.
What makes me think of it, Chris, is because, I mean, I agree with you. I was reading that stuff and going, this is pretty much standard operating procedure. Don't sign your kid up for Division I if you're not, there's going to be some ridicule. There's going to be some mockings. There's going to be some man stuff that goes on that is probably not popular or, in mainstream culture. But what it spoke to me was, man, they've probably dodged this bullet everywhere, at Maryland, at Ohio State, everywhere for years because kids struggle in workouts all the time.
Yeah, and when I say it's standard operating procedure, EB, that doesn't mean I think it's right.
Yeah.
It's the culture, and it's the way it is.
Yeah.
And by the way, what are the number of kids on a Power 5 football team? Is it 100? Jason, is it 100? Is it 105?
Somebody said 120 the other day. I don't know if that's true. Yeah. Maybe count walk-ons.
If you count the walk-ons, it's probably in the hundreds. Yeah.
Okay, so just do the math. You know, when it comes to writing an article like that, if you have 100 kids, just using a round number, you have 100 kids, you got, you know, probably 25 guys that are your absolute core guys, starters, you know, guys that you have to have on your team. Then you have another 20 guys who are backups who get a lot of run, who get a lot of burn. And then you got some periphery guys in the next 20. So that puts you at 60, 65. That leaves you like 35 or 40 guys who can't be happy about their lot in life. You know, I mean, and it also may mean that you've got, you know, a few of those guys just happy to get along, happy to be on the ride along program. So my point is that you have a situation that's sort of rife with somebody wanting to pop off about a coach in any situation. You know, I mean, he's not happy about something, a meeting he had or some sort of a confrontation he had. And anytime you read a story like that that has so many unattributed quotes, it kind of makes me think I'm a little uncomfortable with a lot of that. But I'm sure there's some truth to the stories, and you know, now you have to ferret it out and let the chips fall, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if there's one player or one staffer talking, but when you have the multiple sources, you know, you've got 10, 12, 15 players and a couple staffers, then it really, when they all pile on, it really makes it worse.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there's sort of that old axiom, too, where there's smoke. You know, I mean, you have to deal with it. And ultimately, there's, it's a shame that you have to deal with it because a kid died what is, you know, widely reported to be a very preventable death. And it's just brutally sad. And the worst part of that article for me is, and it was as savage an article about a program as I can remember reading in some time, but the worst part about it as a father, and you guys are all dads, is the father, you know, trying to articulate what he misses most about his son. I mean, that's cripplingly sad when you read that kind of stuff.
No, it's brutal.
Now, and Chris and I had the discussion on Sunday, and we were talking about the preseason workouts. And Chris, you played, you know, the one thing that stuck out for me when I was at Richmond was, you know, we get there mid-August, 2-3 weeks before classes start, and we immediately, you know, like the first day, we're out on the track, we're running sprints, it's 100 degrees, and then we're going in and doing drills, and we're shooting for an hour, and then we're scrimmaging. I mean, these were 3-4 hour workouts before the practice.
During a non-practice period, right?
This is way before October.
Right.
This is way before October. And they were harder than the practices. I mean, people have no idea how hard those things are, those workouts. And if you're not prepared for it, especially as an incoming freshman, because at DeMatha, it wasn't even close to that, right? But when you go to Richmond, it's big time. And then you're like, you're coming back to the dorm room going, are you serious?
That's why you were 6'6", 185.
Well, that's why I tore my hamstring like the 4 weeks into it.
You know, with the first workout I ever had, I was a freshman at Colorado, and my workout partner was a former DeMatha guy, great player named Tony Ellis. He was a point guard.
Yep.
And one of our first workouts was at Colorado. We were supposed to run the stadium steps. And when you're standing on the field looking up the stadium steps, it might as well be, you know, you hear Led Zeppelin playing in the background because it looks like a stairway to heaven, you know?
Right.
And I remember Tony used to glide up and down those steps like, you know, like he was dancing. And I just struggled so bad. And I remember vividly, you know, literally in the first week, I think I quit like 5 times in my own head. So it's not an easy track for sure.
So I guess this committee or, you know, whoever's investigating said it's going to be September 15th before they make a decision. So that means DJ's not going to be there for the first, let's say, 2 weeks. And Matt Canada takes over. And Matt Canada, you and I were talking about this, he's kind of the outsider. He was brought in, you know, not like he was brought in with DJ staff. He was brought in last year from LSU, and that's probably the logical decision to make him the head coach, or the interim anyway.
I would guess, and I think that's not an easy call for Damon Evans, who I'm sure made that call. I think that maybe that was what he was thinking, that he was the last guy in and the guy at least associated with sort of the culture that had come, you know, under fire during the weekend. That is a tough call. I mean, how do you pick a guy out of a lineup in a situation like that?
And then here's the other question. All right, you know, people are talking about Gene Smith, the AD at Ohio State, and whether or not he should be let go too, because Meyer and Zach Smith are throwing him under the bus, saying that he actually knew about everything. How safe is Evans in this
situation? Guy's only been there a week.
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody over there feels very particularly comfortable right now. I mean, how could you, or why would you? I mean, I think that you have to, you know, there's a certain chain of command and a line of reporting that has to be followed in situations like this. I'm assuming in the process of Damon getting that job over there, I'm assuming that he and the president had sort of looked at the McNair issues, you know, closely. You know, we live in a day and age where it's hard to keep secrets, man. I mean, and when everybody's got a camera on their hip, you know, and everybody tweets and posts, it's hard to put the lid on something. And my hope is that I would guess these guys certainly understand that it's impossible to keep bad news down. You've got to get out ahead of it, and not just share it. You got to get out ahead of it. But I don't know, man. I mean, it appears to be the story where there are other shoes to drop, I guess. And we'll just kind of see what this panel comes out with in a couple of weeks.
Hey, real quick, just switching gears to the hoops team for Turge. How good are some of these freshmen he brought in? The Jalen Smith kid and the Wiggins kid. Does he like them? And then do you like the core coming back?
Yeah, I mean, the Wiggins and Sticks are terrific. They're just really, really good players. And Sticks is one of those guys. I watched him and Bruno Fernando play against each other in practice. And it was really impressive how they were going at each other. Hard to believe that there's going to be a more athletic front line than theirs, provided you have good health there, obviously. Hard to believe there's going to be a more athletic front line. Point guard is solid in Anthony Cowan. It's just that a lot are required out of the freshmen. You know, they certainly look capable. I watched them practice a couple of times before they went to Italy, and I was excited. I mean, it's a good group. I think it'll be fun to watch. I'm looking forward to being entertained.
Yeah.
All right, Chris. Thank you, buddy.
We'll see you, buddy.
Catch you on, hopefully, in better circumstances. Thank you, pal.
All right. See you guys.
All right, man.
Chris Nocke, everybody. All right, but Chelsea does join us. Chelsea James from the Washington Post. It's been a long season for fans. I know it's been a long season for her, following this team, the ups and downs. I don't know. How would you describe sort of the last 48 hours? Kind of like it feels like the last dagger, but they aren't going down without swinging. They're fighting. It's not good enough to close these games out.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy because as hard as it is to believe, I think this is the best they've looked, you know,
right.
With the exception of the bullpen. I mean, the lineup's been great. The starting pitching is, you know, for the most part hung in there. And it's just absolutely in keeping with this season that once it finally came together, the bullpen is, you know, the one thing that wasn't supposed to be the problem this year is falling apart. So it's just you kind of just throw your hands in the air and say, you know, what more can you do? It's just that kind of year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have to tell you. I mean, you follow this team, you know it better than any of us. But in August, Daniel Murphy's hitting .356. Bryce is hitting .349. Trey Turner's hitting .280. Anthony Rendon's hitting .318. Ryan Zimmerman's hitting .393. Matt Wieters is hitting .281. Wilmer Defoe's hitting .308. It's not the lineup anymore. That's for sure.
No, it's not. And you can look at it and say, well, you know, clearly they're not scoring enough to win, but they are. You know, they're giving leads. You know, they're getting leads late. And I think that's why, obviously, this is so devastating for them is okay, like all this stuff that's been going wrong all season is finally going right, and it's still not happening. And I think it's sort of like you see every flash of every unit on this team, you know, now and then, and you say, wow, if they can only put it all together, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to get put all together.
Mm-hmm. Chelsea, yesterday we spent a little time with our callers talking about who do you blame with this bad bullpen. You know, Rizzo traded away or let a couple guys go, whether it was Kelly or Kinsler. The manager doesn't know that one of his players has a bad back and some pain, can't control the ball. So it almost seems like everybody's culpable. And then, of course, the players for letting them down.
Yeah, to me, it's everything. You know, a season like this doesn't happen because one guy is having a bad year or missed one decision. I think the narrative flip on Sean Kelly suddenly being, you know, the one that got away is absolutely stunning to me when I read what fans have to say. I mean, that is just, it's like the Dusty thing. It's like everybody wanted Dusty gone last year, and then all of a sudden, oh my gosh, he's the savior. It's like, pick one. You know, you can't have it both ways. It's maddening. But I just don't think a year like this happens for one reason. And you know, it's sort of like 2015. You know, Matt Williams bore the brunt of that, and I think, you know, played a role. But, you know, there were contract guys underperforming. There were an absurd number of injuries, very much like this year. Rizzo obviously traded away some guys that would have helped. So there's that, and ownership deciding whatever they decided at the deadline. It's just, you can go up and down the line of things that aren't happening, and yet they are this close to beating the Cubs in three games, you know, three game series, and this close to taking the first one against the Cardinals. And at some point, you got to look at the players and say, you know, you're the ones throwing the baseball. You're the ones, you know, missing your spots or making bad decisions. And I think there's a little bit less of that than maybe there should be here.
Yeah, I mean, we talk to Mike every Wednesday, as you know, Chelsea, and he would never say it, but I'll say it. It's over. I mean, they're not going to come back and win this division. They're not going to come back and win the wild card, especially the way the bullpen is constructed, having all of these injuries. So I'm wondering, and I think that this team will slip further and further down in the standings. I'm wondering, is it a possibility? I'm not going to ask you about Bryce because I don't think he'll be traded, but is it a possibility that Mike sells some pieces off, you know, last week of August before the deadline? Is it possible?
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't rule anything out. That's not happening. I think that right. You know, decision was made. Although I shouldn't say anything definitively with this team, but you know, I do think that's possible. I think ownership might prod him to do that if it becomes even more clear that this isn't happening. But like you said, I think it's fairly clear already. It's just, who can you get through waivers? Can you get anything back? But they have some pieces they'd be able to sneak through there, particularly in the bullpen. And I think, you know, if it's over, they might need to take a look at that.
Any sense that there's any regret in moving Kelly and Kinsler?
No, not at all. I think, yeah, just no. I don't think they're worried about that. You know, Kinsler hasn't been great for Chicago. I mean, he would have taken the loss the other night if the Nats could have held that lead. And he's a little bit shaky, and Kelly, I not at all. You know, I think that they could get what they got from Kelly from a guy like Suero, and have, frankly. So I don't think there's any regret there. I think it's just another example of just a bad look for this team. It's one of those things that, you know, now the bullpen implodes and everyone gets hurt, and you know, it just doesn't look good. But I think on paper, that's not the problem. I just think there's injuries, and when you lose basically two closers in the setup, man, it's not going to be the same, and it's not going to be good.
Davey Martinez last night, you guys all quoted him saying, you know, he didn't know what else to do. You know, I think he was specifically referring to Solis, right? He's brought in there to get lefties out, struggling. But, you know, you can look at that in a larger way. I don't really blame him for saying it. I know some people are attacking him. He's just being honest. I mean, maybe he should have all the answers, but clearly he doesn't. Nobody does. Did you have a problem with that comment? Does that speak to his lack of ability to kind of figure something out here? Or is that just a brutally honest comment at a brutally critical part of the season?
I have no problem with it. And I think the part that's being lost is it has to do with Sammy Solis. And I'd be interested to see who has an idea of what to do with Sammy Solis. Right. Who does know what to do with him? I think the thing that is kind of stunning to me about the way that Davey's interpreted is that, you know, he doesn't necessarily have an idea or a plan or anything, but the guy is pretty genuine and kind of real about, you know, how tough these have been. And I just don't know what else he's supposed to say other than like, we got to keep playing. You know what I mean? Like, what do you want him to say? You want him to flip chairs and say, oh, we're done, you know? blame this guy, blame the, it's just really interesting, kind of the uproar at sort of almost everything he says and does, and certainly he has not been perfect. But I think if there is a guy in terms of positivity suited to a season like this, where you really don't want veterans to turn, you want to kind of keep everybody up and feeling good, he's actually done a really good job of that. I think the clubhouse has taken to him a little better over the last couple of weeks, and he's just a really consistent guy. So it's interesting to me that someone would have a problem with him saying, I don't know what to do with, Sammy Solis, or in the broader sense, because, I don't know anyone that does know what to do in the broader sense.
Right.
Chelsea, what did you think of Davey last night when he was recapping the game, referring to runs scored as points scored?
That was
weird.
Yeah,
he's doing that a lot.
Why?
And it's not helping his optics. I don't know. It's weird. So
he's done that multiple times?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And obviously the guy knows baseball, it's funny.
His whole life.
I know that's another thing that isn't, it's just like, you just help yourself out and say runs. You know what I mean?
You're
giving everybody fuel for this ridiculous
virus. I've never heard of a baseball guy say points, ever.
It makes him sound more clueless.
Yeah, it's weird. He's not clueless, obviously. He knows their runs. But I don't know. Maybe it's the new thing. But it's weird, too, because, his kids played soccer where they are goals. I don't know where points is coming from. So it's really, it makes me chuckle, and I know it makes a lot of people annoyed, but it's definitely weird, and we'll have to get to the bottom of it.
Chelsea, where is Strasburg at? Where's Doolittle?
I've almost forgotten about those guys. Yeah. I've almost forgotten about Stras.
How many starts has Strasburg missed on this particular DL stint?
That'd be three.
On this one, three, I think, so far. Three, four. He's going to throw a bullpen. No, sorry, sim game Wednesday. I think after that, he would go rehab start Monday, so maybe back by the end of next week, which is maybe about the time that this would really become over. So it's kind of unfortunate. I think Doolittle is trying to throw off a mound. He did so yesterday, but we didn't get to talk to him. But I get the sense he's a week or so at least away. So the help is coming, but it might be too little, too late.
Are there any kids in the minors that they would bring up just to play for 2-3 weeks once they are out?
Yeah, I think you'll see Robles for sure. And I'll be interested to see if they reach and pull up Carter Kieboom. If not, to kind of see what he's got for their future and maybe to showcase him for someone else for an off-season deal. But other than that, I think they're probably just going to have to play it out. But I think those two guys will get some time. Definitely Robles and maybe Kieboom and maybe Rowdy Reed, the catcher, was suspended and is back now because he's hitting well and they have no catching. So, but it's not going to be like a star-studded September by any means.
How's the Romero kid doing in the minors? The kid that had the off-the-field problems?
He just came off the disabled list, which you look at DL and say, okay, sure, DL, you figure there's something going on, but actually he was just injured. And apparently he's really kept in line. And so they're really encouraged with him, but he's working his way back from injury. So I think this is kind of a shaky, maybe a little bit of a lost year for him. But when he's on the field, if he's right off of it, he's really good. So they feel like they've got him right off the field now. And that's very encouraging for them, I think.
Last question. Who do you like in the race between Atlanta and Philly?
I think the Braves. They just got a little more experience and firepower. But I have ruled out the Phillies since day one and just been completely wrong. So I wouldn't be surprised if I am wrong again.
Well, I was definitely wrong about the Braves. They are really good. The Braves team is good. All right, Chelsea, always a pleasure. Thanks for the time, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks, I'm sure.
Yeah, thank you, Chelsea. Appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
All right, Chelsea James, everybody, from the Washington Post.
We're less than a month away from our Junkies Poker Open. Last year, we set a record, MGM National Harbor. Hopefully, this year will be even bigger. Awesome time. Hope you can join us. It's coming up September 7th, MGM National Harbor, presented by Potomac Metals. Get all your details at junkiespokerroom.com, but here it is in a nutshell. Thursday night, we have a little get-together. We hang out. We have fun with the listeners. Friday morning, we wake up. We do the show. You're welcome to join us as we do the show from MGM National Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And then right when the show's over, we head over to the poker room and they have a brand spanking new poker room there, and we have the tournament. It's that simple, and somebody's going to win a lot of money, and it's not going to be one of us.
Correct.
Although EB cashed last
finally,
last year.
Finally got a cash. I can't even remember what it was for, but that was good.
Was it for like 400 or something?
I don't know. I feel like it was more than that, but who knows?
I think it was in the 5 to 6 range.
Who knows?
Hey, it's good. Better than losing money.
Always silly to cash, but it's just, it's an arduous, long, you have to be patient.
Yep.
I was so patient. You know, I didn't do that. Like, oh, I'm down to 10%. I'm going to just start shoving. I didn't do any of that. I held on to every chip for dear life. And that, I think that's how you have to do, like a donkament like that.
Will AI be there again this year?
Allen Iverson? I don't know.
He was there last year.
He likes to gamble.
He was there often.
Yep.
It was a junkies roulette tournament, maybe.
Right. I wanted to bring this up real quick. So yesterday, we have a college fantasy draft, I believe, coming up next Thursday. Bodie used to be producer here, runs this league, and Jason's in it, Cakes is in it. I did a team with my son last year. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a bonding experience. He actually did the bulk of the drafting. But yesterday, just to kind of prep and to do something different, because he's always playing Fortnite, we went to Harris Teeter and we got a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how much these magazines go for nowadays? I couldn't believe it when I scanned it. Right,
$12.
So I bought like 2 items and the magazine.
No, some of them are like that. Some
it was
like
$9.99.
Some of them that are like an annual, like a once a year. Yeah,
I think I bought Lindy's college football annual.
Yeah,
$10.
It's nice to have the magazine. You have all the information there. You can take wherever you want. But I just go online.
Right, online they'll have the ranking, and that's going to be an online draft. I totally understand why you would do that, but. Like I said, it's just something that, you know, yesterday we had a little discussion about should we take, like all of a sudden he's telling me that we got to look for our second. We're convinced that you have to have a dual threat quarterback in this league.
Right.
Because last year we had Sam Darnold, and he just wasn't getting the points that some of these guys who are dual threat QBs who will never get drafted, but they just rack up a ton of points, get in fantasy.
Get.
So he was saying with our second pick, though, we were going to target is it Drew Locke?
Drew Locke, yeah, from Missouri, but he's not really a dual
threat. He's not a dual threat, but that would be our second. We'll get dual threat with our first quarterback. This is a 2QB league.
Right, you're trying to get Khalil Tate or Trace or someone like that.
Well, I think, or Clemson's QB, right?
Yeah, but you don't know who that starter is necessarily going to be because Trevor Lawrence is the stud young kid, like the freshman who might supplant Kelly Bryant. That's going to be more of a battle than
anyway. I was just more blown away by just the cost of the magazine.
I don't ever
go out and buy a single magazine.
Only time I buy magazines when I'm at the airport and I want something tangible to hold.
And those will be $6, but you're at an airport.
No, sometimes I'll buy like an Apple magazine or something. I just want to read like the latest things going on in computer world or something. That'll be like $12.
Really?
You mean some of those? Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Some of those can be expensive. No, what jumped out at me this morning, so this just came online, I think this morning, the Washington Post is doing a story on Dwight Howard. And this is hard to believe. I guess I believe it. But so he was 285 at the end of last season. I believe that, right? Close to 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big guy, though, 6'11". They say now he's lost like 23 pounds.
Mm.
He's down to like 262 or whatever that puts him at 3.5% body fat.
Sick.
They say he's flying around dunking like it's 2008. Okay, mm-hmm. He made a point to his trainer that he wants to play until
he's 40,
right? And so they said, Candace Buckner is one that has this story. And so they said they're going to try to change his game, too, obviously. He says when he came into the league, it was Alonzo Mourning, it was Jermaine O'Neal.
Sure.
He said it was basically kind of like glorified arm wrestling, like big, you know, wrestling match. And now everybody's shooting threes and all that. So his trainer... they've tried to completely break down his game to the point where they want him shooting threes. They said he just did a workout. They want to add that to his game. They say he's a freak athletically. They said
he never figured out how to shoot free throws. How's he going to shoot threes?
I don't think Scotty Brooks wants him shooting threes.
A recent shooting session inside the Wizards practice facility, he made 81 of 128 shots around the floor, including 60% of spot-up threes. Now, that's nobody guarding you.
Right.
And I know. It's like Rob Saller passing him the ball. You know, but 15 to 25 shooting threes. Empty gym. He wants to incorporate that into his game.
I believe when I see it.
But I'll tell you this. He's always had that body.
Like, he came out of high school.
Well, they say last year he was up to 12% body fat, which, you know, we kill for 12%. Great. But they're saying now 3.5. That's like bodybuilder territory.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sick.
I don't even know if I believe it.
3.5.
I don't even know if I believe that. I don't even know if he can live like that.
He eats all kinds of wacky candy.
Well, they changed his whole diet. They have the whole thing. They diet now consists of 60% protein, 20% carbs, and 20% fiber.
They need that trainer working with John Wall because he has a tendency to fluctuate.
Yeah, we all saw the picture.
Now, he got thin when he came back last year from injury. John did.
Right. Yes, he did. Right. He'll be fine.
You don't need Dwight Howard shooting threes.
No.
Hey, they're trying to change his game. Adapt.
Remember when Chris Humphrey started shooting threes?
Well, he wasn't bad at it.
Yeah, but he wasn't bad.
It didn't look normal. It looked weird. Is he even still in the league? I think he is.
I don't know with who.
I think he is, but it looked weird.
I just would not want Dwight Howard shooting threes on my team.
What if he's like, Manute Bol will shoot threes at the end of his career? Remember that?
Sure.
Yeah, but he wasn't shooting a ton of them.
No, but that's kind of when it started to change.
Chris Humphreys last played for the Hawks. I'm not sure who he's playing for right now. I have to look up his stats.
But he did play last season.
I think so. I think he was with the Hawks last year.
Hey, real quick.
Briefly.
I had this story. I'll just squeeze it in here at the end of the show. That Pornhub, okay, they're going to have their own awards to compete with AVN.
Oh, they are?
Pornhub Awards so September 6th.
It's not enough to have the AVNs.
Do you know how many people check out Pornhub every day?
How many people? Now, is this in the United States or in the world? Like in India and China and all
it's
over?
Just the amount of visitors per day.
I don't know. How many people are in the world?
6 billion?
Yeah, six or seven billion.
I'm going to say a billion.
No, I mean, that's ridiculous. It's 81, still, it's 81 million visitors
81
per day.
All right, I'm only off by 900
81 million. But they're going to have something called the Pornhub.
I would have guessed a billion, too.
The Pornhub Games is going to follow six female performers over the course of many episodes, and they're going to spar in categories. It's going to start tame with, like, pole dancing. What are the other categories?
You can't even say I'm on TV.
Of course we can't say I'm on TV.
You can't even say I'm. There's no way. What is the story I read about, guys, about like cryptocurrency and porn?
They're going to compete for cryptocurrency.
Oh, so that's
the awards.
The Butcoin?
Yeah.
Let's see what Butcoin's today. Oh, Butcoin's really making a comeback. $6,100.
It was down in the fives before.
God, what a loser.
Struggling right now.
I haven't sold it off yet.
What are we doing?
I just got to hit the button.
You know what? Let's do this. Let's make a pact. If it ever hits 8,000 again, let's sell.
Oh, 100%.
It's going to hit 8,000.
Okay, I'm saying when it hits 8,000, we sell.
Why 100%?
It was just at 8,000 a couple days ago.
It's like 2 weeks ago.
It'll hit 8,000.
Just let me know because I never check.
I want to get rid of it. I want it out of my life.
It's going to make a comeback like IPCT or whatever
knowing my luck, it'll go to like 15,000 when I sell it.
It's going to go to a million.
Who cares?
Right.
You won't have to deal with it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.